What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Prometheus Chats. My name is Eric Davis, and what are the Prometheus Chats? Well, after I saw Prometheus last week, I realized that a lot of people wanted to talk about this film, good or bad. And I was witnessing a lot of very engrossing conversations online, and I thought, wouldn't it be fun to call up some of my friends in the online movies world and get them on the phone and have kind of roundtable conversations about this film, different kinds of roundtable conversations. So, with that said, this is part one of the Prometheus Chats. Before I introduce our guests, I just want to say that we are going to be – this is going to be spoilerific. There are spoilers all over this thing. What's the fun in really delving into this film if we can't spoil the hell out of it? So – if you haven't seen the film yet and this kind of thing bothers you, then just go see the film and come back. These aren't going anywhere. So you've been warned. Joining me on this first part of the Prometheus Chats today, we have Rick Marshall. Rick is a writer and a critic for sites like Movies.com and IFC, and he also just covered the Prometheus London premiere for Space.com and Needlerama. Hello, Rick. What's up?
Hey, how's it going, man? Yeah, I just got back from London not too long ago.
Nice, nice. I heard that was a good time out there.
Oh, for sure, for sure. A lot of fun.
Okay, cool. And also with us is Sean O'Connell. Sean's a writer and a critic for sites like Movies.com and Fandango and Cinema Blend and Screen Crush, among others. Hello, Sean.
Hi, Eric.
Cool, cool. Everybody's here. So our portion of these Prometheus Chats is going to be a review of the film. We're going to kind of tell you our overall reactions to the film, and we'll touch on some subjects. And that's kind of going to be our route with this little chat. So I'm going to start off by asking both of you, and I'll start off with you, Sean. Does it live up to the hype?
Man, that's really tough to say because it depends what your definition of the hype is. And I think what I'm seeing from reactions is that people's level of hype was either higher or lower than some. I'll say personally, I'm not an alien purist, and so I didn't need a lot of T's crossed and I's dotted. And I don't really know what I was looking for going into it. But personally, it absolutely lived up to what I hoped it was going to deliver. It's hard to say because I didn't really know where my expectations were in terms of how this was going to plug into canon. I was really interested in Ridley Scott's comments that it had, you know, strands of alien DNA, and I wanted to see how that maybe was explained. But I really just enjoyed it more as a standalone, pretty deep sci-fi story with a lot of different aspects that some do tie into Alien and some are just really interesting in their own way.
Yeah, definitely. I'll get to Rick. I'll get to you in a second. I just wanted to touch upon what you said is that I've been reading a lot of reviews and a lot of people seem to be aggravated at the fact that this is not just like Alien. Right. And I think that we have to go in and we have to understand that this is a different film. This is decades later. This is a different summer kind – this is a different audience that this film was made for. And I just feel like to compare it to Alien and be upset because it's not more like Alien is just not fair to this film.
I agree. I think it's almost cutting the film off at the knees because it's some people want it to be something and it clearly – I don't think it ever intended to be that way. That quote about having strands of alien DNA annoys me to no end because had he never said that – I wonder how many more people would just be able to accept what this film was trying to do on its own and not keep judging it against some other standard that probably shouldn't exist for this film.
Yeah. Rick, what do you think? Does it live up to the hype?
I agree with Sean in a lot of ways that this film here, it really depends on what your definition of the hype was. As for being the end-all, be-all culmination of, 30-some years of Alien franchise – I don't think any movie could possibly live up to that. But as for being a great standalone sort of movie that also, shares some things with a great franchise and answers a couple of questions, asks a lot more of them, and then basically is a great return to, sci-fi horror that can also be kind of cerebral, mm-hmm. It absolutely lives up to all of those things. So if that's what, will make you happy in a film and that's what you're looking for, it will definitely live up to that.
The film is at its best when – fill in the blank, Sean.
I think when it's building up to its central mystery of will we be able to actually meet our makers? The film asks such massive questions about where we come from as a species and where might we go after we die. Those are huge, huge benchmarks to say we're going to try and hit. And so the film really does build for 75% to 80% of it to a point of where we might possibly meet our makers and hear from them specifically why they created us. And I think as it's constantly, constantly working toward solving that mystery, which really compelled me as I watched it, I think it works its best trying to get to the heart of that mystery. If the film starts to fall apart a little bit for me, it's in those last 10 to 15 minutes where I feel it almost had to become an alien film or a film of that sort. But I found it way more interesting, way more compelling as it was noodling through those philosophical debates in the first three quarters of the film.
Yeah, I thought that the film kind of fights against itself at times where it's saying we want to kind of be a little bit of a slow burner like the original Alien. We want to set that mood. We want to really delve into some really deep philosophical ideas here, but we're still a summer blockbuster and we still have to have a money shot every 10 minutes. And I felt like sometimes some of those ideas were cast aside in order to have these big explosive quote unquote summer blockbustery moments. Rick, do you agree?
My feeling, I think the film is at its best when it's dealing with Ridley Scott's version of the future. I absolutely love this sort of dirty futuristic vibe that he creates where it's, you know, with all the space truckers and everybody's kind of in the business of being in space and no one's really there for like the amazing flashy shiny wonder of things. It's all a business, even if it's just finding out and talking to the makers and answering these questions. Everything's kind of gritty and dirty. I think it's at its best when it's allowed to be that way. I love all the scenes where they're exploring the caves and that type of stuff, and the technology that Ridley Scott has come up with for some of these scenes is phenomenal to me. I just love the futurism of the entire film.
Yeah, the film is gorgeous, and I know a lot of people have spoken about the 3D, and yeah, here we are again. This is another film that, you know what, we trashed 3D, and a lot of people crap on the films that rush conversions of 3D, but this is a film that gets 3D right. I mean, you really enjoy it, and I would recommend seeing the film in 3D. I think it's Ridley Scott's universe is gorgeous to look at, and adding the 3D element really brings you into the film more with this specific one. Sean, do you agree?
God, especially from the opening scenes, which are these sweeping aerial shots of a planet that initially I thought might be Earth, and speaking with Ridley Scott, I sort of find out it might not be. Maybe we could save that for a spoiler discussion. But the longer they go on, the longer it pulled me into just that depth of focus that when directors use 3D the right way, it's phenomenal. Now, I did find myself halfway through, you know, sort of not paying attention to the visuals as much. And I realized that's just because I was starting to get interested in the characters and the story. But yeah, there are some fantastic scenes that really, really do use the perks of the technology. And I think this is one of the few times where I would definitely recommend paying extra for the 3D ticket, because you're going to get a little something more out of the story.
You know, I'm interested, and I know that we have you writing some unanswered question pieces. I know you've spoken to Ridley Scott, and you know, I don't want to delve in too deep into some of these unanswered questions, but I am interested now, because you know, we are led to believe that this opening scene is the creation of Earth. And you're saying that Ridley is leading us in a different direction?
Well, he's hedging his bets by specifically saying it doesn't have to be Earth. And in fact, he doesn't believe that it is. Now, I mean, this is a director who has to know what he's creating, obviously.
Yeah.
But he's saying that alien is essentially acting as a gardener of DNA and spreading that DNA around the universe. And that doesn't have to be our planet. You know what happens in discussing this film with a lot of people right after the screening? We immediately wanted to make a parallel to our planet, to Earth. And in speaking with Ridley Scott, he just made me think with a much larger prism. You know, here we are talking about a story where people can go to sleep for 2 years and wake up, you know, in a galaxy far, far away where there's an atmosphere that sustains, we can breathe in it. And yet we automatically want to kind of reduce it to, well, this has to be our planet because it looks like Earth. According to Ridley Scott, there are galaxies and planets in this mythology that he's creating, you know, countless ones, and this could have just been another example of these engineers creating life on another planet. He just wanted to kind of show that their DNA in the larger picture did help create other races and other civilizations, and that planet we see probably isn't ours.
See, and that's interesting, and that's one of – you know, I want to lead into the film is at its worst when and let you guys fill in the blanks, but it's interesting. Is I know they're creating this large kind of – expanded mythology here, and they may or may not have plans for a sequel, and there's a lot of stuff in Prometheus that feels like it's setting something up for later on. And if for some reason this film does not do bonkers opening weekend, I don't know if we're going to get that sequel. And so if we don't get that sequel, then I feel like we have half a film here, because there's all these ideas and all these things that are set up that aren't paid off. And will we feel gypped? I mean, do you feel like that's a smart maneuver on the part of these guys going in, is to set up all these things hoping that we're going to get more films? And what if we don't get them? Rick, what do you think?
Well, I think that's actually part of the entire brilliance of what Ridley Scott has done with a lot of his films. It's something I talked with Damon Lindelof quite a bit about during the junket, is the reason why movies like Blade Runner and so many other, you know, the films he's done have had sort of lasting quality, is because they leave this ambiguity the entire time. They leave these questions out there. It's a very difficult line to walk, though, because on one hand, you have things like, and to be quite honest, things like Lost, the TV show, where there were all these questions answered that a lot of people felt, or those questions asked, a lot of people felt weren't answered, and they felt let down by it. But other times you have movies that have lots of questions being asked that never get answered, and that makes them great. So it's a weird line to walk, very, very difficult one, but I feel like that's actually part of what Ridley Scott does well.
Yeah, I think that is a debate that's showing up. I think there are a lot of unanswered questions, and some people are pissed off. They wanted some answers. Some people think that they're using ambiguity as a crutch a little bit just to move the plot forward. Sean, what do you think? Do you think that all of the answers are in this film that need to be are in this film, or do you feel like they kind of did jip us out a little bit and they didn't give us a more complete, satisfactory experience?
Nope, I absolutely do not feel jipped in any way, shape, or form. And if the film has opened up a few other doors in which they could possibly go and explore, that's great. But I still think I got enough out of Prometheus that made sitting through the experience well worth my time. And I thought it actually had a pretty strong standalone story, whether it was the quest for Numi Rapace to you know, get some answers on this distant planet, and then also the quest of Waylon's character, who's played by Guy Pearce, who I don't know how much we want to get into with him, but he also has a mission that he'd like to fulfill. And we got to an end point for each of those, and that end point ended up being, you know, a trigger into more discussion. I don't think that's a bad thing. I think most sci-fi should bring up some really meaty debates and questions that aren't going to be right there for you to just walk away from. And the questions that this film asks are so big, you can't really expect a concrete answer. This is the first time this year that I've walked out of a movie with I'm still thinking about it days later. Yeah. I have to give the film credit for that.
Yeah, I remember telling friends right afterwards, I said, this has the potential to be the next Inception in terms of how much people are going to talk about it afterwards and kind of analyze a lot of the ideas in it and try to figure it out and piece it together. And what did he mean here? And what did they mean here? And so that's one of the reasons why I wanted to have these conversations, because I feel like this is a film, good or bad, that people want to talk about. One of the biggest questions that I have to ask is it has to do with Guy Pearce's Peter Whalen character. Does he or does he not look a little bit too much like old Biff from Back to the Future 2?
Yes, he does, unfortunately. Yes. You're just a Back to the Future enthusiast, though. Right?
I am.
You think you see that in too many roles.
I am. Rick, what is your favorite scene in the film?
Wow, my favorite scene, the med pod scene, I think is really the if Alien had its chest bursting scene, the original chest bursting scene with John Hurt there, this one has the med pod scene with Numi Rapace basically conducting self surgery on herself and being in this. It combines claustrophobia with monster attack with like horrific, like, I guess, self surgery. I don't know how to describe it other than self surgery scene. It basically combines all of these elements into something that actually had me wincing while I was watching it.
Yeah, it's completely batshit crazy scene. I mean, and it's totally unbelievable that she gives herself a C-section pretty much. Stitches herself up and then, like, continues for another 35, 40 minutes kicking ass all over the place, running here from there. And every once in a while, she pulls an injection. Who knows where she – the girl's half naked. I don't know where she's pulling these injection needles out from, if she's pulling them out of her ass or wherever. But, and then she keeps injecting herself. I guess we're supposed to think that this is some kind of futuristic codeine that she's injecting herself with, but whatever. It's completely unrealistic, but it is the money shot scene. I mean, this is a scene that I think everybody's going to be talking about for years to come. It takes that original chest bursting scene from Alien and it turns it into a completely it ups it to the nth degree. Sean, is this your favorite scene from the film as well?
It was definitely one of the greatest scenes in the film, but probably not my favorite. My favorite has to be when Michael Fassbender's character, David, his motivations throughout the film are enough to make you want to go back and see the film again and again and again to find out just where this character is coming from. I'm not quite sure we'll ever really have the answer. But we get to a point where he goes off of the expedition and lands in the room where, you know, the infamous space jockey, although it's not, it ends up not being the space jockey, of course, in the way that Ridley Scott plays with the mythology. But he sort of, you know, it plugs into the program, into the computer that the aliens are using, and unlocks this magnificent space map that starts to really take the mythology and just blow it out really huge. And that's when I realized we're watching something really special. Now, I don't know if it all made sense. And that's why I do want to go back and revisit it, you know, a couple of times to see what we were seeing there. But that's where I was so overwhelmed with potential, you know, from this story. And I realized that, thank God, Ridley Scott was reaching for something bigger with this. And I was really just thrilled by that scene.
Yeah, you talk about Fassbender's character and kind of what his motivations were. And that was one of the issues I had with the film, is that I didn't know – they didn't do a good enough job explaining why he was so shifty and why he was seemed like he was kind of out in his own agenda. I don't know if some of that is tying into Weyland's kind of – the mythology of Weyland, where they originally wanted to use some of these aliens as weapons, or they wanted to kind of steal some of that technology or whatever and bring it back to Earth. So I don't know if that was some of his plans as well. But that kind of aspect – it wasn't clear in the film, as well as why they were coming back to why did they think they thought they were coming back to destroy Earth. That isn't very clear in the film either. Rick, did you get more out of those two aspects than I did?
I was actually confused about a couple of those things too. What I thought was interesting though was during some of the press stuff that happened in London there, Michael Fassbender actually talked about a scene where it actually describes what he was talking to, when he was talking to Weyland in the dream machine or whatever it may be, whatever you want to refer to it as, where he basically described what happened and that they think that all the engineers are dead. There's this whole scene, I guess, where without the aging makeup actually says, you know, well, you need to, what should I do? You need to try harder, and basically instructs him to do some of the things that he then subsequently does and actually takes things to the next level with his sort of experiments with the black goo or whatever you will, you know, call it there, which I thought was interesting, but I still left me a little bit wanting for some motivation to everything that he was doing.
Yeah. I mean, and Sean, I remember we had a conversation earlier this week when you were going to interview Michael Fassbender, and one of the things he said is ask him, you know, there's this you know, he talks to the aliens, is one line that he says to these guys in their language, and then they go ballistic. Did you ever get an answer out of that?
They bumped my Fassbender interview from Friday till Sunday to now it's tomorrow morning. However, I did ask Noomi Rapace while I had her on the phone.
And
this is one of these instances where I don't know if the actors know, or I don't know if they're being coy, or I don't know if they just don't want to give too much of it away. I'm gonna check it off to the they don't really know. Like, there isn't an answer to this question. She kind of told me I need to ask Michael, or I would need to ask Ridley. But she just said she thinks that at that moment – David conveyed a message that Weyland told him to convey, and that it was something so egotistical that it set the engineers off. I'm not quite sure I'm buying that, but that was her official answer to me. I still will ask Fassbender. I'm supposed to get Fassbender tomorrow. I guarantee I will ask him.
It's like the lost in translation whisper.
Apparently, he was joking with journalists at the junket that we're going to find out in part two that there's a love affair between David and Elizabeth, and that he's knocking off all of his romantic competition. But I think that's just Fassbender having a good time with journalists.
That's funny. So. Rick, what were you going to say?
Oh, no, I think that's fascinating. I would love to know what that actual one statement was. But this is all just plays into that all these different things we can kind of pick out of the movie that were like, I wonder what that meant there. And I think that's the greatest thing about this film is that when you're having the conversation, that little things like that.
Yeah. So, no, I mean, let's wrap it up. But I think it's pretty obvious. But are you guys recommending this to others, Sean?
Absolutely, I am. And in fact, I'm telling people that it's kind of the smart sci-fi blockbuster that we're looking for every summer. I mean, you get a Transformers film or something like that that's just going to pander to. We want to see, you know, things blowing up. But this is the one that's going to really be like a steak dinner where you're going to sit down, dive into a lot of different things. You're going to disagree with some of it, but it's going to challenge you. And I'm almost telling people to try and read John Milton's Paradise Lost instead of renting Alien, because I think you'll get more out of the analogies to Milton's work than you will to even Ridley Scott's first film.
Yeah, you know, and I think a lot of people – I think this film kind of it touches some buttons on people. I mean, a lot of people are coming out of it and their first reaction is, I didn't like it. It didn't
right.
– it was all over the place. The script was a mess. And then as you sit with this film, it grows on you and you really start respecting the fact that they didn't answer all these questions and you have to piece it together yourself, and that there's all these different ways that you can piece it together. And some things mean something and some things mean something else to someone else. And sometimes that's a fulfilling experience. Sometimes, you know, a film that really makes you want to go back and watch it another 10 times. I mean, that can't be a bad thing. Rick.
I'm legitimately dumbfounded. Not just to end on this, I'm dumbfounded by people who came out of it and said, you know, that they just can't, that they didn't like it. I mean, it's so gorgeous, like you said, and there's so much going on. If you compare it to 95% of the other stuff we're dealing with at the summer blockbusters, to me, it's just head and shoulders above all of it.
Yeah. Rick, do you, you're recommending it?
I'm absolutely recommending it. What I'm telling a lot of people is that they need to go into it not expecting Aliens, the second one there, because it's not a people versus monsters movie. It's nothing like that. It's a people, you know, running and cowering and hiding from these monsters that are there and thinking about why the monsters, you know, are actually after them and thinking about lots of things and trying to not be killed, which is a very different type of film than, you know, what some people might expect if they're just kind of going into it looking for a, you know, people shooting a bunch of aliens movie. And I'm absolutely recommending it to everyone I possibly can.
I agree. This is an Alien. Forget about Alien. If you want, you can go back and watch Alien after you watch Prometheus. But this is a different film. This is a different beast. This is a different era. We're making it for a different kind of audience. And I just think that judge it by itself and have fun with it. And if you're the kind of person that really loved Lost and you loved all these unanswered questions and you loved kind of debating it with your friends and picking things apart, then you're going to get a lot of that in Prometheus. I hope for the filmmaker's sake that they do make a part two when they do make a part three, because if they don't, there could be a lot of pissed off people that are going to want some answers out of Damon Lindelof, I think, and they're gonna heckle him for years if they don't make a sequel to this film. Guys, thank you very much for joining me and on part one of these Prometheus chats, and we'll go see the film and we'll keep watching it.
Awesome. Thanks, Eric.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks a lot, Eric.
Bye.